Welcome to the show. On today's episode, we have Heather McConaughey. She is a nutritionist, a health and mindset coach, and a former nurse. She provides coaching to women in order to improve their health and wellness. Her mission is to empower her clients to master nutrition, skyrocket their energy, and create body confidence. In today's episode, we'll be talking about how to optimize your period with simple nutrition and lifestyle changes. So if you have horrible periods, PMS, irregular periods, hormonal acne, or any of the other signs of female hormonal imbalance, this episode is for you. Please enjoy. Welcome to the Kakatibi Podcast. Your source for all things health, happiness, and beauty. Hi, Heather. Thank you so much for being with us here today.
Thanks for having me, Kat. I'm so excited to be here.
Before we get into our periods, hormones, nutrition, let's learn a little bit about you. So tell us about your journey and how you went from being a nurse to a nutritionist, health, and mindset coach.
Yes. So I was a nurse for about 3.5 years when I started to get really interested in my own health and fitness. I had gained some weight and I just wasn't feeling good in my skin. I was sluggish. I wasn't feeling confident. I was dealing with mental health issues like anxiety, depression. And I was like, I need to do something. So I joined a CrossFit gym, knowing nothing about CrossFit. And I just got super into working out. And one of the things that happened while I was doing CrossFit was I lost weight, but I also lost muscle. And then I tried to eat more to gain muscle and I just gained fat. And I just got super frustrated. And so I was like, something's not working with my nutrition. I need to learn about this. So I actually hired a coach. And within 3 months, I had lost 9 pounds of fat, gained a pound of muscle. My energy was amazing. I was performing super well in the gym. I was getting super strong on all my lifts. And I was like, wow, this is the answer. Like, how does not everyone know about this? Why are we struggling? And I ended up getting certified in nutrition and I was just super passionate about it. I honestly wouldn't shut up about nutrition. I'm sure I annoyed everybody I worked with at the hospital because I was always talking about it. A few months after that, I just thought, I wonder if I could coach other people in nutrition. I'd already had people at my gym asking me, what are you doing? I love your recipes that you post on Instagram. And my business was born. I got my first client May 27th, 2017. And I've been in business ever since then.
Let's just start with periods. In your opinion, why are so many women suffering from irregular periods, painful periods, bloating, PMS, and all these hormonal imbalances that have become so common?
Such a great question. I think there's so many things at play. Coming from a background as a nurse, one of the things that I always learned to do was to think critically about any sick patient that was in front of me. And there can be many causes of a disease in our. So what's causing abdominal pain in one person can be a completely different cause in another person. One person could be having indigestion. The other one could be having an ectopic pregnancy. And so if we think about our periods the same way, okay, we might all be suffering the same symptom, but there could actually be a lot of different causes at play underlying why you specifically are having issues with your period. So I can't like say, oh, it's definitely this one thing that's affecting everyone, but I think it's a constellation of factors that are impacting people. I think one of the biggest culprits of hormonal disruption in women is stress. If I had to just boil it down to one thing, it's stress. We are living in a world that is now 24/7. You can get access to any piece of information you need, services you need. We're being bombarded with messages. If we thought it was bad when we just had like TV and radio, I'm 40, so I remember those days, pre-internet. Now it's crazier, right? Like social media, Facebook, Google, the internet. And you take that information overload, you couple that with economic pressures on people. There's racism, there's sexism, there's all these factors that kind of come and hit women. Women are also being squeezed, right? A lot of women have families. They're also working now, and a lot of them take care of their aging parents. daughters, the burden of taking care of older parents usually falls on daughters more than sons. And so poor women are just like, we're trying to like shoulder the world's problems. And I think that manifests physically in our bodies. So I would say, I think there's many things that contribute to it and we can dive into that. But I think the number one factor that I think is causing it is stress.
Yeah, I would tend to agree. Stress, and for me, I would say chemical toxin bombardment from the water, from perfumes, from our products that we use, makeup, all of these things contribute to it. It's just a lot. And women do it, not men.
Yeah, exactly. Men aren't putting, you know, makeup on their faces. And I love makeup and I love perfume and I love all those things. So it's like, I put those things on my skin and I'm like, wait a minute, none of the guys are doing this. I love learning about investing and I'm really into learning about Bitcoin and all the cryptocurrencies. And I was watching this video right before we hopped on and I'm watching this YouTuber guy talk who's very smart and I love learning from him. And he looks like crap, right? Like he's got bags under his eyes, no makeup. And I'm like, man, us women are like putting ourselves through the ringers to look so beautiful. And like these men over here, like they're not doing anything to look like halfway decent. And it's just, I don't know, it leads into a lot of questions about like oppression of women and the patriarchy and feminism. And like, why are we even doing these things if they're hurting our health? And lots of things to unpack. But I agree with you. I think the toxic overload is impacting people. Our bodies are designed to excrete and deal with toxins. That's why we have our kidneys. That's why we have our livers. That's why we have sweat. That's why we have our lymph system. Our bodies are designed to do that. But then we're being overloaded. Those systems in our bodies are being overloaded. So if you are drinking alcohol and then you stack on that caffeine use and then you stack on that blood sugar instability and then you stack on that estrogen disruptors and then all of a sudden you have a breakdown in the system.
Yes, I hear that. I still have women that listen to my podcast and reach out to me and they're still in the early stages of dealing with maybe hormonal problems and issues and they're insistent on asking their gynecologist or their endocrinologist for help before they do anything diet, nutrition related. But even after multiple doctor visits and being given band-aids to maybe push the problem down the line, like a hormonal birth control or some other pharmaceutical, they still have the same problems, but they're told their labs are normal. So what's going on? What are your thoughts with why the traditional medical community hasn't figured out how to properly help women with their hormones?
I think the first thing to understand is the system of medicine in our country and healthcare, like the payer system, the pressures on doctors, etc. I feel for doctors because they have an inordinate amount of pressure on them to see a high volume of patients in order to like be economically solvent in their businesses. If you think about a doctor in private practice, like they're in a business too. They have staff, they have overhead, they rent space, they have supplies, they have tests, they have a light bill, they've got taxes, right? Like they're a business too. And insurance is only paying them a certain amount and it's not always that much. So like they're trying to see as many patients as possible. And that's, I really can't fault the doctor because it's like, it's the system. They're also not trained to really investigate root cause in the same way that like a functional health doctor is. They're focused on really treating like the symptoms of things. So same with a surgery. Okay, like we found a problem, we go in with surgery, we fix it. Or like you have diabetes, let's control your blood sugar, as opposed to, okay, what's causing the diabetes? They're trying to mitigate the damage that's being done to your body by controlling symptoms, which works in certain diseases. If you have uncontrolled diabetes, you do need your sugar to be better controlled, regardless of if you've solved it with lifestyle or not. If a medicine helps control your blood sugar, it will prevent worsening of certain symptoms like neuropathy, blindness, and those types of things. But it's still not solving the diabetes. It's like preventing worsening of certain other symptoms or problems. So I think that we have to understand the limitations of doctors and also not look to them to be like our savior. Like I struggle with my own mental health issues and I have a team of people who help me with that. I have a great therapist. I have a primary care doctor who sometimes runs labs for me. I also have a functional health doctor that I'll consult with. I'll get a Dutch test and get supplement recommendations from them. I also have a great psychiatrist who is more like a therapist to me, who just talks things through and who's helped me realize, wow, medicines don't really work for me, but she's still there as part of my support team. Like, she prescribes a sleep medicine for me if I have trouble sleeping. But like, right, I have a team. And I think it's so important as women that we stop looking to a doctor as like the holy grail who's going to solve all my problems. Like, no, sis, you actually have to do some work on yourself too. You got to look at your lifestyle, and you got to look at your caffeine use, and you got to look at, are you meditating? Like, you can't expect them to just magically solve your problem. And I think that's the mindset that a lot of us have, especially in America. It's, we just want a quick fix. Can someone just give me a pill to fix this? Instead of, no, you need to overhaul your lifestyle.
Yeah. And it's so hard because a lot of us, we're struggling with time and we have too many things going on, and we're already stressed out. So we want that quick fix. We want to just be told, here's the magic pill. Take this. You don't have to deal with it. You don't have to think about it anymore. And the reality is, we have to force ourselves to think about it, because it's just going to make things, it's just pushing it down the line. It's not going anywhere.
Yeah, exactly. I actually had an ovarian cyst almost 4 years ago. My period got super strange and abnormal. I had a period for 3 weeks and I was like, something's not right. And I went to my doctor. I had a cyst. She said it needed surgery. I didn't get a second opinion. I just was like, okay. And I had this surgery and it did resolve the issue for me, but it made me stop and be like, whoa, like the years of pushing myself through nursing school and living in big cities and then being an ER nurse and now starting a business, like the stress that I had been dealing with and not truly coping with was starting to take a toll on my body. And so it made me pull back and be like, okay, I have to make some changes here.
Yeah, I do envy my friends that have just like a 9 to 5. And when they get home, they're done. They don't think about it. They don't care about it. Their weekends are completely, they don't worry about work. But when you are an entrepreneur, that's it. Like, it's every day because you're responsible for everything. But yeah, I feel that. So let's talk a little bit about PCOS, because a lot of my listeners have PCOS or some other types of hormonal imbalances, which we'll get into. So there's several types, but the one that's the most common seems to be closely tied with insulin resistance. So why are nutrition changes so necessary for this type of PCOS? And what do you wish traditional doctors would tell women who have this?
Okay, great. So there's really two questions in this. Let me answer the second question first. What do I wish doctors would tell people? I wish they would tell them that what they eat is going to affect their bodies and that they can make a huge amount of progress with their PCOS symptoms with nutrition. It may not, quote unquote, cure it from them. It may be something that they have to manage and live with their whole life, but it's not something that can't be dramatically helped by with nutrition. So I think that's the thing that I wish doctors would say is, hey, nutrition really makes a difference here. It's not just like, oh, just take birth control. Gosh, nutrition change is so important. So insulin resistance is a complicated process in the body. It's basically where the cells are no longer as sensitive to insulin. So insulin is that key that locks into the outside of the cell and opens the cell to the transport of glucose molecules into the cell. We have these things called GLUT4 receptors. They're actually little channels and they live in the vesicles in a cell. And when insulin locks into the outside of the cell, those GLUT4 transporters actually get released from the vesicles. They merge into the cell wall and they create little channels for the glucose molecules to flow through. And so when you are insulin resistant, you just don't have as many GLUT4 receptors. Insulin just doesn't work as well on the outside of your cell. And so it takes a greater amount of insulin to actually unlock the cell. So that leads to blood sugar increases. And so there's a lot, though, that we can do with nutrition to impact blood sugar. So the food that you eat gets absorbed into your body, right? It gets broken down into small molecules that are then able to be absorbed into the bloodstream and used by cells. Your cell can't use a whole polysaccharide, right? Which is a chain of sugar molecules, which is like a starch, right? Can't actually absorb that. It has to break it down into individual glucose molecules before those can flow into the cell and be used for fuel. So if we think about what we're eating, like when you are putting huge amounts of sugar into your bloodstream, like simple sugars, you're increasing your blood sugar rapidly. And you're really taxing your pancreas over and over again because your pancreas is releasing insulin and your pancreas doesn't know exactly how much insulin to release, right? It's like it gets a stimulus that the blood sugar is high now and so it dumps insulin, but it's not like a precise formula where it's this is the exact amount of insulin you need to absorb this many carbs. So what can happen is there's too much of a dump and then it pulls sugar out, then it drops your blood sugar. And you just get really wonky. And there seems to be some correlation between the type of carbohydrates you're eating and insulin resistance. For example, I had a client who, not PCOS, but diabetes type 2, which is also a form of insulin resistance. He actually wasn't overweight, right? He didn't have a lot of weight to lose. Typically, what helps insulin resistance is anything that helps lose weight and increasing exercise. Okay. So those two things actually improve insulin resistance. So nutrition comes into play because we know that nutrition is more effective for losing weight overall. Exercise is more effective for maintaining weight loss, but nutrition is actually more effective for inducing a weight loss. So if we can just do anything to help reduce someone's weight, we will improve their insulin sensitivity. Blood sugar control and just overall weight loss are two of the reasons why nutrition is so important.
So what mistakes do you commonly see women making with their nutrition? Is there anything that you see across the board? This happens a lot.
Yes, I actually have it distilled down into, I think it's 6 core things that pretty much every, and it's not just women. I've worked with a few men. I don't really work with men anymore, but men make the same mistakes too. So it's the same things that all people make, or the same mistakes that everyone makes. So the first thing is under eating protein, very common. I've pretty much never seen a client come to me who is not under eating protein. And the reason I know this is because for the first 4 years of my business, I would actually have any potential client keep a food diary for 3 to 5 days so I could analyze their nutrition before they became a client. And this is why I know this, because I've literally looked at probably 500 food diaries over the past 4 years. So under eating protein, overeating fat. Okay. So fats aren't bad. We don't need to be scared of them. Different types of fats have different like quality effects on the body, but overeating fats, inconsistently eating carbs. So maybe having a day that's like super high, but then the day like super low, eating too many high glycemic load carbs, including simple sugars and added sugars. So within that category, like added sugars being too high, not eating enough vegetables, especially green vegetables. And then lastly, too much alcohol. Pretty much anybody who comes to me, they have all of those problems happening.
Yeah, I'm the low protein person. I just have a horrible time stuffing protein.
It's a challenge, especially in our convenience world. Like you can go to McDonald's and get plenty of cheap carbs and fats, but protein is more expensive to actually buy. It's expensive wherever you go, but it does have a lot of nutritional benefits for us, including blood sugar control.
Yes, I definitely feel better days where I have more protein. How can food and macronutrient tracking help you build awareness around food?
Yeah, I'm such a huge fan of macronutrient and food tracking as an initial skill to develop. And then I love to teach people how to transition away from that, because tracking your food for the rest of your life is not fun and not sustainable and not necessary. So I like to teach how to do that initially and then move people into a structure where they're using more of frameworks to think about their nutrition and make sure they're eating properly. But food and macronutrient tracking is so valuable if you are confused about nutrition, if you don't understand nutrition, if you're struggling with your body, because it's going to give you very precise data. And when we have more data about what we're doing, what am I putting into my body? Like, what's actually going on? Am I under eating? Am I overeating? What's happening? You start to really gain a lot of empowerment because you realize, oh, I actually have a lot of say in this area of my life. Like, I can actually make changes. Like, I've personally discovered that, like, my mental health tanks when I eat added sugars and gluten or white flour products, highly refined. And I'm just like, wow, this is great data for me. So it helps you get that data. You also really learn about nutrition when you track. So when you track and you're trying to hit certain macronutrient targets, you have to actually engage and look at foods. Like, wait, how much protein does an egg have? So a lot of people think eggs are high in protein. Eggs actually have more fat than protein. They have 6 grams of fat, 5 grams of protein. Egg whites are very high in protein only, but that's a knowledge piece that people gain when they track. And then you have that knowledge embedded in you for life. Like, I don't have to track anymore because I like understand food and what's in it. So I think those two reasons are why I think food tracking is so valuable, especially if you have any kind of like hormonal issue.
I know how frustrating it can be when you have weight to lose and hormonal imbalances. So I want to make sure that I mention that there's other types of hormonal imbalances, that sometimes diet and exercise are not enough. So in those cases, maybe they need maybe something to do with their thyroid or other things. So when you're working with women, how can you tell, okay, your diet's good now, your exercise is good, maybe there's something else. And then how do you approach that?
Yeah, great question. I think going back to the period, your period is what we call a vital sign. Okay, it's actually considered the sixth vital sign. And if you are doing all the things like lifestyle-wise and your period is still abnormal, that's a sign that your hormonal condition could use some additional support, perhaps from supplements or a functional like health doctor, something else to support you. I'm a big fan of Dutch tests. Dutch tests, I'm sure your listeners are familiar with those, but the dried urine test for comprehensive hormones will give you such a great picture of where your hormones are at. And then you can add in some supplementation from a reputable functional health doctor to see if that makes a difference. What I love about a Dutch test is it's measurable. So like you can do a Dutch test, implement a supplement protocol and retest to see if it made a difference. And if it doesn't, like don't take the supplements for the rest of your, don't spend hundreds of dollars on supplements if they're not working, but it's worth trying for 3 to 4 months and seeing if it made a difference if you've done these other lifestyle things first. So I think if a woman's doing the lifestyle things and her period is still abnormal, that's when I would say, hey, let's do some additional testing, or I think you need some additional support. I personally also will screen people for my program. If they have a severe hormonal condition that's untreated or not managed, I'll say, hey, I don't think I'm the best person for you. Go get some support over here first. And then we could always revisit my program, especially if like weight loss is their primary goal, because it can be challenging for people, say with Hashimoto's, to have effective long-term weight loss.
I also want to go back to PCOS, because when I was younger, I had lean PCOS. So I had all the hormonal problems like every other person with PCOS, but I did not present as having weight. In fact, I was very thin and muscular, so I did not look like someone who would have any need. So when I would go to the doctors, they're like, you don't need to lose weight. I don't know. There's nothing we can do for you. But I found, like you were saying, once I finally admitted that I had to change the diet, then things got better. So for those women that have hormonal irregularities, but they're still lean, they don't want to lose weight, how can diet also help them?
For sure. So sometimes what's going on, and actually this is another thing that I see in a lot of people who come to me, they're under eating. A lot of women are shocked to come to me and start working with me. And like, one, they're never hungry. And sometimes they're like, oh, I have to eat more food today. And while I never want to force feed a client, we always want to listen to our bodies and let that guide us too. Under eating can create stress on your body as a woman. Think about it, right? Your female body has the potential to create life, grow life, feed life. Your body needs fat stores for that. It needs fuel. Otherwise, you and the baby could perish, right? If we think about how many women used to die in childbirth and small children died from lack of nutrition or lack of breast milk, that's a real threat. We don't think about it as much anymore in our modern American society because we have a lot of comfort for most of us. Even if you live in poverty here, you can still go to any hospital in America in the emergency room and get treated. Whereas if you're impoverished and like a developing country, you don't have that kind of access. So I think it's important that we understand that under eating creates stress on the body, and anything that creates stress now is going to impact your hormones negatively, right? Like your cortisol is up, your blood sugar's imbalanced. That's going to affect your estrogen. All of that cascade starts to happen. So actually by fueling our bodies properly, we take our bodies out of this fight or flight response. You can actually reduce anxiety just by eating more and eating quality foods and nourishing your body. So I think that's really important for women to get. And like I mentioned with that client I had who had type 2 diabetes, but he wasn't overweight. And yes, he's a man, so he doesn't have PCOS, but he had the insulin resistance from the diabetes. He didn't look diabetic from the outside the way that we thought, oh, aren't people with diabetes typically overweight or whatever, but it was inside. So we need to remember that just how we look on the outside doesn't determine the internal state of our health.
Yeah. And we're hearing a lot about that on the news now where they're like, oh, this athlete died. Oh, this super healthy person died. And it's, you can't tell by looking at someone if they're healthy. Unfortunately, that's not how it's done.
Totally. There was once a patient in the ER who was like a super lean, like healthy, like marathon runner. And he had a heart attack during a race and came in to be treated. And here's this person who everyone would be like, oh, he's doing, you know, so good, taking such good care of his health. He's a runner. He's lean. He's the epitome of health. And he's like dropping dead from a heart attack. Luckily, they were able to save him, but you can't judge a book by its cover.
So why is tracking our cycle so important? And can you give us some benefits of tracking your cycle?
Yes. Oh my gosh. I'm such a huge fan of tracking cycles. I track my cycle and I take my temperature every morning and it's like the first thing I do. And it's just such a great reminder for me that like taking care of my female body is like valuable. It's valuable to honor my femininity. So like we said, like your cycle is a vital sign. So just if you noticed your heart rate got super fast all of a sudden, that would be an alert to you. Something's not right in your body, or your breath rate like increased, or your oxygen saturation decreased. Those are all signs that something's off. If your period is off, that's also a sign that something's off with your health that you need to attend to. If you're not tracking your cycle, you aren't tracking that as a vital sign. You can't measure it. And I work with so many women who don't even understand how to count their cycle. Just the most basic skills. They don't understand there's four phases to your cycle. Some people say three, but I like to think of it as four, right? Three to four. They don't understand these basic concepts. So then they don't have power over diagnosing like their issue or what's potentially going on. So the tracking just alerts you and gives you data so you can see if there's an irregularity or something's off.
So what is the best way to track your cycle? And are there any apps that you love?
Yes. So there's many ways to track your cycle. You can be super lo-fi and just have a note section on your phone and spend $0. And what you would do is the simplest way would be to just write down what was the first day of your last period. So day one of your cycle is the first day that you bleed. Okay. So day one of your period is day one of your whole cycle. And then you would just keep track of that. Like day one was September 22nd. And then you would just keep doing that until the next time you got a period, you would write, okay, my next period started October 23rd. And that could be a very simple way to track your cycle. A more intense way or a more data-driven way is to do an app where it tracks your temperature. And this is an app that I use called Natural Cycles, where I'm actually tracking my temperature every day. And you're using a highly sensitive thermometer, so it goes to 1/100th of a decimal point. And so what it's doing is it's getting a highly accurate temperature, and it's going to tell you when you ovulated and predict your period start date based on that. That's because after you ovulate, your body temperature rises about 1 degree and then stays elevated until your next period. So I love Natural Cycles. I've been using it for about 3 years. You can use it simply as a knowledge app. So to have knowledge over your cycle, you can also use it to optimize fertility. So it can let you know, hey, these are your most fertile days. So if you do want to get pregnant, you can have more sex around those days. It also can be used as preventative for pregnancy. So it'll say, hey, like use protection, use a backup method. But if you want to try a more natural form of birth control without hormones, it's also a great option. Just make sure you're using like condoms or some other protective device if your partner and you aren't monogamous and you're at risk for STI. There's also Period Tracker, Period Tracker Lite. There's the Flow app. So there's a lot of different apps out there, but I love Natural Cycles because I love having that data of my cycle every day.
So I've heard that you're better at certain things during certain times of your cycle. Can you walk us through how to optimize our lives during each part of the cycle? And for example, when should we do something stressful? When should we do something that requires a lot of mental focus?
Yeah, I love this question. I love the concept of cycle syncing. One of the most basic things for us to remember as women is that our brain chemistry is literally different every single day of our cycle until our cycle resets. So you have a 28 to 34 day brain chemistry cycle. Comparatively, a man has a 24 hour cycle. So his brain chemistry basically resets every 24 hours. It's like Groundhog's Day for him. And so as women, we are thrown into a very masculine oriented world. It's, oh, every 24 hours, I'm up again. I do the same thing again. And we buy into this myth that we should feel the same every day, that we should perform the same, and that we're just like ignoring the fact that our brain chemistry is different every single day for 30 days. So when we understand that basic concept, we can then drill down even further and see, oh, the first few days of my period, I'm actually really tired, or all I want to do is sit on the couch, and I'm going to honor that. But like, hey, the middle of my cycle, I'm feeling like super flirtatious, or I feel super confident on camera, or I feel like I love the way I look. Or maybe like at the end of your cycle, you're feeling more like contemplative or reflective. So just starting to notice those patterns that you have in your life can make a big difference. You have your menstrual phase where the two hemispheres of your brain are communicating like really effectively. So your menstrual phase is a great time for reflection. Do some journaling, go for a long quiet walk. Tune in, turn off your devices, turn off music and shows. Just get quiet and see if you can hear things better when you're on your period. The next phase, follicular, is a time where you will typically be higher in energy. Your mood is higher because your estrogen is rising. So it's a great time to tackle maybe harder projects or things that you might find more irritating or like frustrating later in your cycle. You'll have more capacity to deal with challenges at the beginning of your cycle. When you're ovulating, that is a great time to be on camera or to do sales calls. If you have a business, to interview for a job, for first dates, your skin will look super glowy. Your face actually looks more symmetrical when you're ovulating. It's so crazy. And then you will be just more magnetic. Your energy will be more magnetic. So it's a great opportunity and time to pull things to you. Be careful what you try to pull to you when you're ovulating because it can be very effective. And then your luteal phase. So the front half of your luteal phase, you'll typically feel pretty good still. It's that back end, second half of the luteal phase where we can start to have like PMS symptoms, start to feel more tired, cranky, have mood swings, more teariness, things like that, fatigue, cravings. And so this is a great time to go quiet. This is the week where I try to not be as social in my business. Like I try not to do sales calls, or I try not to have to do a lot of speaking or talking, and maybe think more on systems or just reflection. So those are just, we could delve more into that, but that's a broad overview of how to start optimizing that.
Yeah. I love planning things around my cycle. I definitely will not do podcasts on my period or like a few days before because I'm like, I'm going to be puffy. I'm going to be overthinking it. No.
I love that. Yeah. See, you're like in touch with what's already working for you. And I'm the same way. Like when I'm ovulating, I'm like, oh, this is a great time for me to film like 20 reels and just batch record a bunch of, change my outfit. But like I know that about myself. Like on day one of my period, I'm not going to force myself to get cute and film reels. Do you know what I mean? Like it makes no sense. So as you start to tune into your feminine energy and understand that you're fluxing and you're flowing and like we're not rigid creatures as women, then you start to really drop into how to sync up.
And I also do not help my daughter with her homework on my period or around my period. That's my husband's job during that time.
That probably is a very wise life choice.
So let's see. What is moon syncing during your period and what role does that play during your cycle?
Yeah, moon syncing is so interesting. So they have found, and when I say they, I'm just like general assessment of women's cycles data and just surveys that most women either ovulate with the full moon or they ovulate on the new moon. Okay, so new moon meaning no moon, right? The sky is dark. And if you ovulate with the full moon, it's called a white moon cycle. If you ovulate with the new moon, it's called a red moon cycle. And look, this is going to get maybe a little woo. Like this doesn't, you can't go to PubMed and look up moon syncing, okay? So just take what I say and see if it fits for you. But I have found correlations for myself with the moon. There actually is some interesting kind of research that shows like moonlight can increase fertility in plants, which makes sense if the light from the sun is impacting like photosynthesis and it creates vitamin D by hitting our skin and it hits our retina and communicates. Like light is a messenger. It triggers different reactions in the world. We have solar panels, right? So there's ways that light communicates. The moon is just sunlight bouncing off this rock that's orbiting us. So it's moonlight is still sunlight. And so it makes sense that it could impact us. And there's the potential kind of theory that like women ovulate with the full moon because there was more light to see each other to have sex, because 1,000 years ago there wasn't electricity. Heck, 300 years ago there wasn't indoor electricity. So you either had a candle when night fell at 6 p.m. or 4 p.m. in the winter, or you didn't. But if there was a full moon out, you could actually see somebody to get randy with. So there's that kind of theory around it. And then there's just this interesting energetic shift that can happen for women. So when you're on a white moon cycle and ovulating with the full moon, women are tend to be more in like a mother energy, whether they have children or not. It can be a mothering energy to themselves, to people in their life, to loved ones, to their actual children, to their family, and a very kind of nurturing space. Red moon cycle can be more of like a healer, goddess, priestess type of energy. So I have noticed these shifts for myself. Like when I was like really pushing hard in my business and growing, I was in a red moon cycle. And then I moved to Kauai and my body shifted into a white moon cycle. And Kauai, when I lived there, it was a very like healing year for me, a lot of slowing down, a lot of rest. It was very interesting. So just paying attention to that and seeing where you fall, again, just start to gather data. Do you tend to have a white moon cycle? Do you tend to have a red moon? What does that mean for you? It can be another fun dimension to incorporate.
No, I totally believe in that stuff because when I was giving birth to my daughter, it was on a full moon. The hospital was packed. And then I had to stay there longer because I had health problems, not her. But it cleared out right after the full moon. It was dead. There was nobody there. And I'm just like, what the hell happened? And the nurse is like, oh, that was a full moon. It's not a full moon, so we don't have anybody. We're bored. And I'm just like, okay, so this is a real thing.
Yeah. And when I worked in the ER as a nurse, we would talk about the moon affecting things. So it's, you can't deny that there's some type of impact from this. And it makes sense, even if you're like just a logical, right-brained like person, it makes sense just thinking about it. Like there's more light in the night sky.
Yeah. And I'm wondering if that's where werewolves came from, like women on their periods or maybe ovulating or something.
Totally. Something fun to think about.
Yeah, let's move on. Why do you bloat during your cycle? And is there anything that women can do about this?
Yeah, so bloating is connected to progesterone, right? So we have a higher ratio of progesterone to estrogen as we enter that later part of our cycle. And your progesterone does drop too at the end of your cycle, but it's that imbalance of the ratio where you start to bloat and it can just increase water retention. So there are things you can do. So salt will increase bloating as well. So if you have your progesterone impact and that's causing bloating, plus you're eating a ton of salty foods, you will bloat even because water follows salt in the body. And so your body is always needing to keep the right concentration of salt in your bloodstream. It's tightly regulated by your body. So if you eat a lot of salt, your body's going to hold on to fluid to keep that ratio the same. So you can just reduce added salt and reduce processed foods. So the same advice that we hear all the time, eat more real foods. This especially helps during the latter part of your cycle. So avoiding foods that have added salt, like microwavable foods, prepackaged foods like crackers, just anything that's processed, like it didn't come out of the ground or it didn't come from an animal directly. Try to avoid those foods if you struggle with bloating. Also adding in more leafy greens. So especially greens that are higher in potassium. So like kale, spinach, chard, those, especially chard, I have found to be very good at reducing bloating. I will say one thing about kale, it is considered a cruciferous veggie, and all the cruciferous veggies can cause gas. So if you struggle with bloating, you may actually want to hold off on kale. But if you take a digestive enzyme, it may help with that. But like chard and spinach, those leafy greens, really good when you're struggling with bloating.
Is there any way that you would recommend adapting exercise to your cycle?
For sure. Again, I think as women, we feel this pressure like, okay, I need to do the same workout every day. I need to like be hitting the gym 5 times a week. Like I can't ever let up. And look, this used to be me. When I did CrossFit, there was a day where I had like just started my period. I went to the gym to work out and I was bleeding. Like my body's bleeding. I was cramping. And then I was pushing myself into this really hard workout. And I remember just feeling exhausted. And I remember the coach saying something like, oh, you're running really slow today. And I wanted to be like, yeah, I'm bleeding out of my uterus right now. Like, you have no idea what this like is. You're a man. But it was a wake up call to me that, oh, I'm not paying attention to my body like during my cycle. So I always tell people to just really pay attention to how they're feeling. Typically, the first couple of days of your period, you should not do high intensity exercise like HIIT, cardio, heavy weightlifting. But the caveat is listen to your body. Sometimes the first day of my period, I don't have bad cramps and I actually feel good doing a little workout. It's then like days 2 and 3 that my flow gets heavy, I cramp, I feel more fatigued. So these aren't like hard and fast rules. Again, listen to your body and let that inform you. But typically at the beginning of your cycle, take it easy those first couple of days and then slowly start to ramp up. You could totally do like a yin yoga at home, or a yin yoga is basically like an adult nap too. It's fabulous. You could go for a walk, a short walk, just listen to your body and don't push yourself. And then in your follicular phase, so as you're coming out of your period and you're moving towards ovulation, your energy will start to rise typically. You also feel more social. So that's a great time to go maybe to a group fitness class or try something new, push your comfort zone a little bit. Maybe push the intensity of your run or try lifting heavier weights. Same thing through ovulation. And then in your luteal phase, that front half of the luteal phase probably will still feel pretty good. Second half of the luteal phase, just tune into your body. If you start to feel really fatigued, drop back more into like walking and yoga as you head into your period. If you feel like doing a little HIIT or weights, that's fine, but just try to tone it down a little bit and always listen to your body.
And are there any types of exercise that are better for women who are under, let's say, chronic stress?
For sure. So cardio, if we think about what cardio, it's exercise where your heart is beating at a much higher pace, right? It's called exercise-induced tachycardia, meaning your heart is beating higher than normal. So over 120 beats basically is what we consider tachycardia. And it's being caused by exercise. So it's not being caused by some kind of medical issue or problem. Like you're not just sitting there and your heart's beating super fast, but your heart is still beating super fast. You're still in a tachycardic state. And if we think about when we're in a tachycardia, our heart's beating really fast, our adrenaline's pumping, right? This is like your body, this is how your body responds when you're in fight or flight, when you're threatened. So that cardio state actually increases stress. Now, shorter bouts of cardio, like 8 to 20 minutes, is basically the sweet spot for cardio, for reducing stress, boosting endorphins, making you feel good. More than 20 minutes can really start to create more stress in the body. I recommend avoiding cardio in general if you are super stressed out, dealing with like intense hormonal issues. Now, if a little bit of cardio helps your like emotional state, your mental health, which I know for me it does, try to just do 8 minutes of sprints on the treadmill and just be done, or like a 15-minute jog. Keep it shorter. But if you're super stressed, I would recommend just long walks. So like an hour walk in the morning, or split it into 2 30-minute walks. yoga. It doesn't need to be power yoga. It doesn't need to be yoga with weights. No, just how about a 30-minute flow or a yin class or anything that's more gentle. Also, mat Pilates is great and bar is also great. I would say bar can be a little more intense than mat Pilates, so just listen to your body, but you can always leave out the weights if it feels too intense. And those are great exercises, but I would avoid intense cardio. Now, weightlifting has actually been shown to reduce anxiety in women. So I would skip cardio before skipping weights.
Yeah, I totally agree with that. Because when I'm under really high stress, I found that I'll lose weight more if I just walk. That's it. Which is the hardest thing to do when you're a go-go person. Just stop and walk.
It's one of the biggest breakthroughs my clients have, because part of my program is focusing on getting more steps every day. And I have them really go after 8 to 10K a day. And they're shocked. They're like, all I did was walk and eat better, and I lost 10 pounds with you, Heather. Or even if weight loss isn't their goal, I'll have clients who will start walking 12, 15,000 steps a day because it makes them feel so good. Their mental health is better. And I know for myself, as long as my body's feeling good, if I walk 12 to 15 a day, man, my stress is like zero. I feel so good.
Yeah, it's pumping the lymphs. It's getting everything moving. It's not just about sweating to death and stressing yourself out.
Yeah. And when we walk too, typically if you're walking, you're doing it outdoors, right? Mm-hmm. Unless you're mall walking or you're on a treadmill, but most people don't go to the gym to walk for an hour and a half. And so typically you're outside, you're walking your neighborhood, you're walking your dog, you're going meeting a friend for a walk, or you're just maybe parking further away and walking into a store. All those steps add up, but you're generally getting more outdoor time, more sunlight, which is good for your circadian rhythm throughout the day to be getting that sunlight, especially first thing in the morning. And then nature's just relaxing, right? If we go back to that core issue that's driving so many hormonal issues, which is stress, then okay, we're getting nature time, which is great for reducing stress. So it's just like a win-win all around.
I've been on a lot of those private weight loss programs in the past that are not really tailored around women and hormones. And one of the things that I've noticed the most was that women post when they're tired, they have a migraine, they're dealing with a stressful situation, and the rest of the group says, go harder on your workouts. Just push more. Just push through it. What are your thoughts on that type of situation?
Definitely not my thing, not for me. So that's a very masculine perspective. And look, the masculine perspective is so valuable and so needed, right? If you have children, if your child was like about to get hit by a car in traffic, you would push as hard as you could to save your child. You wouldn't be like, I'm just gonna see how I feel and like flow with my feelings today. No, you would be in like masculine energy, which is like protect, provide, save, right? That's that masculine energy. And so masculine energy is super important and valuable in our world. But when it comes to our female health and our bodies, pushing more and doing more is pretty much never the answer. Now, if you just lay on your couch 24/7 and like you haven't worked out in 6 months and all you do is eat junk food, you should probably go for a little workout, right? You should probably get you up and go for a walk or do 15-minute cardio dance video in your home. Get your body moving. It's all about balance. But if you're exhausted, if you're about to have a breakdown, if you're so stressed out, if you're falling apart, no, you don't need to go to the gym and hammer it hard. You probably need 4 hours of silence in your home, quiet time with a journal and a candle lit. Do you know what I mean? That's probably what you need as a woman right now.
Yeah, I'm a big advocate for if you feel like that, take a long, hot bath, relax.
Yes.
That's it. That's all. That's what you need right now.
Totally. This past weekend, I did a lot of traveling this summer. I went to Costa Rica and then I came back and I like immediately turned around and went to a business conference for the weekend. So it was like a lot of plane time, airport. And I got back and I was just feeling so exhausted. I was in the middle of a launch in my business and like just doing a lot of, and I was like, I'm cooked. Like I am on empty. And so I was like, okay, what do I need? And I was like, I'm going to take a bath in the middle of the day. It was like a Saturday. And I like took a bath at like noon for an hour and a half. I put a little like Instagram live up that I wanted to watch for 40 minutes, like on my little like sill of my bathtub. I put Epsom salts and lavender and had like a sparkling water. It was amazing. And then I just like relaxed on my couch the rest of the day, and I changed my evening plans. So my friend came to me, so I didn't have to get in my car and drive. I just did all these things to pull back in and reduce stress and relax. And within 2 days, I felt so much more recharged. Shocking. So it's so important that as women, we stop trying to do it all. I'm 40. I know I'm not going to get to everything in life. I've just accepted it. And I'm like, let me savor and enjoy what really brings me joy and happiness.
Yeah. I started adding a nightly bath for 2 hours. I will have my dinner in the bed. I'm super spoiled. I know not everybody can do this, but I will do that with the Epsom salts and all of that. And what a difference. I am such a nicer person now.
I love that. And people didn't used to take showers. People in the olden days, right? Like back in the olden days before electricity, they took baths. Now, maybe they shared the bath water with 7 other people in their family. But I think there's something to be said for like dropping into a bath routine. If you have the privilege of having a bathtub, use it. I've had times in my life where I didn't have a bathtub, like an apartment, and now it's a non-negotiable for me. Like I have to have a bathtub where I live.
Yeah, I have a lot of friends that in my master bathroom, it's just a clawfoot tub. My husband's bathroom has a shower, but I have just a clawfoot tub. And they're like, how could you do this? There's no shower and blah, blah, blah. And I'm just like, you don't understand. I need to soak and relax. I'm like type A. This is how I downtime. And the people, especially the women that are like, oh, I hate baths. I'm like, those are the girls that need to stop and take a bath.
Totally. Exactly. If you hate taking a bath, it probably means you hate slowing down and like just being unproductive, quote unquote.
Yeah. So tell us about your period perfection program. Who's it for? And how is it different from other programs?
Yeah. So Period Perfection is a super simple, super fast digital course that you can do to really learn about your period. So if you're brand new to your cycle, like if you're one of those women I described who like, you don't even know how to count your cycle, or you don't know what the 4 phases of your cycle are, or you wouldn't know where to get started with cycle syncing, this course is for you. If you're super knowledgeable about your period and PCOS and everything, this is not the course for you. Okay. This is really a beginner entry level course. But if you're confused about those basic things, this course will get you started in really understanding your period and then understanding how to shift your life. And it actually has journaling prompts so you can actually take what you're learning and start to reflect on how to apply it to your life. Because it's so important that when we get knowledge, we turn it into wisdom, right? There's so much knowledge out there. You can listen to podcasts back to back. You can absorb all this knowledge. But if you aren't applying it to your life and actually shifting your behaviors, it didn't do anything. It didn't make you more wise. So it gives you that opportunity to apply those lessons to your life. And it's something you can do at any time from home. You can listen to it on your phone, your desktop, and you have lifetime access. So you can always refer back to it.
And are there any other ways that people can work with you?
Yes. So I have a group coaching program called Empower. It's specifically for female entrepreneurs and business owners. If you're also a high powered like professional in your career, you can always reach out and apply for it as well. But it's specifically for entrepreneurs and business owners. And that's where I really teach you to learn and master nutrition, teach you how to supercharge your energy and confidence. And we do it without being obsessively fixated on the scale. And it also really helps you shift your mindset, because so many of the issues women have around food and nutrition aren't knowledge related. Like we all know how to eat better, but it's related to those like mindset issues that stop us. And so I have that as my coaching vehicle for people who want more one-to-one attention from a coach.
Thank you so much for your time. And can you tell everyone the best place to find you online and which social media platforms you're the most active on?
Yes. So Instagram is my favorite place to hang out. Heather McConaughey on Instagram. If you just type in Heather MCC, you'll find me. I'd love to connect with you. Send me a message and say hello when you find me there. And then you can also check out my website, heathermcconaughey.com. I also have a podcast on Spotify and iTunes called The Positive Thread. Give me a listen there. You can also connect with me on Facebook if you want.
So I will put all your information in the show notes. Is there anything else you would like to leave our audience with before you go?
Just remember that how you are as a woman is perfect and beautiful, and it's okay that you don't feel like you maybe fit into the grind and the hustle of the modern world. Don't change who you are as a woman. Embrace your uniqueness, your female energy, and learn to flow with that, because that'll actually be your access to living the life that you want, feeling happy, feeling peaceful and content, but also your access to results in your life as well.
Heather, again, thank you so much for your time. And this has been great. And I will put everything on the show notes for everyone to check out.
Thank you so much for having me.
Thank you for listening to the show. Please show your support for the podcast by leaving a 5-star review. Learn more about the show and what I have to offer you at catkatibi.com. Consider being a part of the new Patreon, where episodes are ad-free and you'll find extra bonus content. Send a voicemail question or email me. Check the show notes for more information. I had an episode a while back with Dr. Mona Fahoum of Feminescence, and we spoke about Feminescence, Maca Harmony, and their Maca products. And if you're a woman who's ever had hormonal imbalances, if you're trying to come off the birth control pill, or even if you're going through menopause, this is a natural way to help ease that transition and to help balance your hormones. There's nothing quite like it, so go to feminescence.com, enter code CAT15, K-A-T-1-5, for 15% off any of their single pack products, and definitely go check out the episode. Just search for Mona Fahoum on my podcast and listen. You won't regret it.
This podcast is for informational merrymakings and metaphysical purposes only. Statements and views are not medical advice. This podcast, including CatKatibi, disclaim any adverse effects by the use of information you may have heard. Opinions of guests are totally their own. This podcast does not endorse statements made by guests. This podcast does not make any representations or warranties about guest qualifications, credibilities, or sanity. Individuals may have a direct or indirect financial interest in products or services referred to on the podcast. If you think you have a medical problem, consult with a licensed medical physician, not just the spirit of your ancestors while on ayahuasca.